from West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Support for the legislature today is provided by the following.
AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State. Online at aarp.org/WV. The West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission, working to double the degrees produced annually in our state by 2025. Through increased opportunities for West Virginians to earn the credentials today's economy demands. The High Technology Foundation, building a stronger West Virginia, online at wvhtf.org.
At the legislature today, a bill to remove the permitting requirements to carry a concealed weapon in the state is one step closer to becoming law after a vote in the House this morning. Delegates also begin deliberating a bill that would increase some taxes and fees to fund roads. And a Kanawha County judge makes a pivotal decision in a case over public campaign financing for one Supreme Court candidate. We discuss that decision coming up on the legislature today. Good evening, I'm Ashton Mara. A bill to remove the permitting and safety training requirements to carry a concealed weapon in West Virginia is just one vote away from becoming law. This morning, the House of Delegates voted to override Governor Tomlin's veto of the bill, and now supporters are waiting on the Senate to do the same.
Three members absent, not voting.
Delegates voted 64-33 to override Governor Tomlin's veto of House Bill 4145. Surrounded by law enforcement representatives from across the state, Tomlin publicly vetoed the bill Thursday, citing public safety concerns. Aside from removing the permitting and training requirements for people over the age of 21, the bill also sets up a provisional licensing process for 18 to 20-year-olds and strengthens some felony laws for carrying unlawfully. Senate Majority Leader Mitch Carmichael expects his chamber to follow the House's lead, even though a recent public opinion poll found 71% of likely West Virginia voters are opposed to the change.
I recognize that there are issues as it relates to public opinion on this, but at the end of the day, it is a constitutional right. And we really don't see much difference between carrying in an open manner without a permit or putting a jacket on over your weapon and then being a felon.
Carmichael says he has heard the concerns of law enforcement, but says the issue is very important to some members of the Senate.
And to the law enforcement community, who we have utmost respect for, we value their input and just hope that they'll work with us to ensure that the safety and integrity of the constitutional right is preserved and that all citizens are afforded the right to carry a weapon and protect themselves when they feel it is necessary.
Carmichael expects the Senate to override the veto Saturday morning.
Your Committee on Natural Resources has...
On the final day to approve bills in their originating chamber, senators passed Senate Bill 555. The bill adds a trigger to increase the state's gasoline tax by 3 cents when the wholesale price of a gallon drops below $2. But the bill also generates new revenue for the state road fund through increased taxes and fees. As Liz McCormick reports, the bill made its first appearance in a House committee today.
Seven members of a House Finance Subcommittee took up the bill Friday morning. Initially, the bill only included the gasoline tax increase, but before leaving the Senate, it was amended. Senators included increases to division of motor vehicle fees and an increase to the tax on purchasing a vehicle. House Finance Chairman Eric Nelson says most of the new revenue would be committed to road maintenance and construction projects.
Collectively, all of these so-called revenue measures would generate, according to numbers, about $300 million and go into roads.
All seven members in the House Finance Subcommittee expressed concern with the bill, including Delegate Carol Miller, a Republican from Cabell County.
I started reading this bill last night at approximately 7:30, and the more I read, the more I circled, the more I underlined, the more I flagged, and it just went times 3, times 8, times negative 1%, up 1%, and I stopped flagging after about 15, and I just think that there's too much in this bill to be without us really understanding the true dollar amount of how many fees we're going to put on people.
The subcommittee did vote to move the bill to the full committee, but suggested the chairman collect more information about the impact of the provisions before putting it to a vote. Again, Chairman Nelson.
I think any revenue measure is going to have a word of caution with it, rightfully so in our tough times. But at the same time, we have a big need as it relates to road maintenance and road construction. And so we've got to put everything on the table, and I think that that's what we have in front of us. The reason for the subcommittee is to give it a little extra time. Then they can report back to the big committee so that we aren't rushed into certain decisions.
Nelson anticipates the full finance committee will take up Senate Bill 555 Monday. For the legislature today, I'm Liz McCormick in the House.
The House Judiciary Committee is considering a Senate bill that creates a program to drug test welfare recipients. Senate Bill 6 requires the West Virginia Department of Health and Human Resources to apply for permission from the federal government to test applicants of the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families, or TANF, program. The bill says applicants who show, quote, reasonable suspicion of substance abuse or have been convicted of a drug crime in the past 5 years would be eligible for testing. Senate Bill 6 passed the Senate 32-2 in February. At a public hearing this morning, only opponents showed up to speak about the bill. Here is some of that testimony.
We are all aware of the ravaging effects addiction has had on our communities as a whole. Testing this small subgroup of the population helps no one. We know that there is a problem and that it is greater than just those receiving TANF benefits. Drug kits, nursing staff, the testing procedure are incredibly costly to an already strapped system. It is my hope that instead of spending time and money into testing presumably innocent, needy families, that we invest in the long-term future of West Virginia through expansion of prevention efforts and through use of supportive, effective, evidence-based treatments for addiction.
Drug testing TANF recipients is quite simply bad policy. The purpose of the policy would seem to be addressing the state's substance abuse problem and possibly saving the state money, but there's an abundance of evidence showing that these programs fail to achieve either goal. First, the fiscal side. Policies to drug test TANF and other recipients of state benefits are often sold with a promise of saving state money, or at least being inexpensive. Instead, programs in other states have proved to be very expensive to implement and run, with some costing millions of dollars. A recent analysis of 12 active state drug testing programs from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services found that none of the programs have produced any state savings. But beyond that, more importantly, these policies also fail at discouraging substance abuse and getting help to those who need it. Policies in other states have overwhelmingly failed to find any significant number of substance abusers among the recipients of cash assistance.
You all were elected to be leaders, so I'm calling on you to be leaders and help end the stigmatizing situation of saying the poor are druggies or abusing these systems that they so need to live the lives that everybody else lives. So with that said, I urge you to oppose Senate Bill 6. Thank you.
What if this bill weren't about TANF applicants? What if instead it were about obtaining a government permit in order to carry a concealed firearm? Should each person filling out the application be required to provide invasive personal details about himself? If the government isn't satisfied with that personal information, should that person have to pee into a cup to please the government in order to get that permit? After all, the government does arguably have a strong interest in ensuring that people with firearms aren't on illegal drugs. Don't worry.
Craig Blair is a Republican from Berkeley County. He represents the 15th Senatorial District. Elected to the West Virginia Senate in 2012, Blair previously served as a member of the House of Delegates, first being elected in 2002 and serving through 2008. Senator Blair is the chair of the Senate Committee on Government Organization. His daughter, Sarah Blair, is the youngest member of the West Virginia House of Delegates. Stephen Schaefer represents the 52nd House of Delegates District. He's from Preston County, a Democrat, Schaefer was appointed in 2015 to fill a vacancy created by former delegate Larry Williams. He's a former member and president of the Preston County Board of Education and served as the mayor of Tunnelton. Randy Smith was elected to the West Virginia House of Delegates in 2012. A Republican, he's from Preston County. Smith represents the 53rd House of Delegates District. Delegate Smith is the Assistant Majority Whip. He also serves as the Vice Chair of the House Energy Committee.
A Kanawha County Circuit judge has ruled that West Virginia Supreme Court Justice Brent Benjamin should not be given state dollars to fund his re-election campaign. The lawsuit was brought against Benjamin by Beth Walker, one of four challengers in the race. Benjamin was attempting to participate in the state's public campaign financing program, a program that is only available to candidates running for Supreme Court seats. But this is the first time a candidate's participation has been challenged. Joining me this evening to discuss the decision and its implications is Anthony Magistro. He's a Charleston attorney at the firm Powell and Magistro. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
Let's start by saying you might be familiar to some of our viewers because you represented the state Democratic Party in the case over replacing Daniel Hall in the state Senate, and they saw that on our show.
Yes.
So, but you're not involved in this case. We should say that, too.
No, I'm here just as an election lawyer to answer your questions.
So let's start with the judge's decision. Judge Todd Kaufman basically reversed the decision of the state election commission tonight. Why did he say that?
Well, the Walker campaign had brought a challenge to the election commission's certification of Justice Benjamin as a proper candidate to receive public financing. And let's talk a little bit about the public financing statute. What it's set up to do is allow a candidate to raise a lot of little contributions to show that they're a real candidate and then receive a big over $500,000 contribution from the taxpayers' money, which keeps them from having to go raise large dollar contributions to support their election. The theory behind that is that judges shouldn't be in this messy business of getting political contributions. And so by getting a lot of little contributions, no one's going to accuse a judge of being biased because somebody gave him a $10 contribution, doing that rather than going out and getting $1,000 contributions. But before the state gives $500,000 to somebody, they want to make sure they're a serious candidate. And there are some very complicated rules and regulations, which the parties dispute what they meant, that regarding what you have to do before you qualify for this money. And what the Walker campaign alleged and what Judge Kaufman ultimately found is that there were some reporting deadlines that the Benjamin campaign was supposed to have met that they didn't. And they also challenged certain contributions that were made because they were made, for example, electronically and there wasn't handwritten signatures, those sorts of things. So there were a lot of little, what I would call technical issues. I mean, no one disputes that he raised over 500 contributions, $100 at a time, and they were raised within a sufficient time period. The question is, did they get all the paperwork done, get it filed? There were some parts where the Benjamin campaign was attempting to file things electronically that the Secretary of State system wouldn't allow them. The Election Commission said that was okay, but Judge Kaufman ultimately decided it wasn't. There were other challenges. For example, he filed his final report at 5:07. At least that's when it was stamped in. And the challenge by the Walker campaign was he had to be there by 5, even though the Secretary of State's office was open. Actually, Judge Kaufman rejected that challenge. But essentially, the challenges were to the alleged failure to comply with the statutes and regulations that govern the public finance system.
So the Benjamin campaign sent out a statement today saying that they would have this decision reviewed, but essentially that means that Justice Benjamin is looking to his colleagues at the Supreme Court to review that decision.
Right. The way our system works in the state of West Virginia is Judge Kaufman's a circuit judge, Kanawha County Circuit Judge, and he entered today a final appealable order. And so either the parties that are aggrieved in that order, either the Election Commission or the Benjamin campaign, can file a notice of appeal with the Supreme Court of Appeals. And ordinarily, it's the five justices of the Supreme Court of Appeals that would decide that. This is one of those situations where the judge, Justice Benjamin, obviously has a conflict because he is a party to the case, and I think it's very clear that he will not stay on the case. His running for election was enough to keep him off the Daniel Hall case, for example. And that had nothing to do with anything personal to him. So I think it's a certainty that he will voluntarily recuse himself. There's also Justice Benjamin's, one of his children is married to one of Justice Workman's children. And so I think it's probably likely and they have a grandchild together. I think it's probably likely that Justice Workman will also recuse herself. So we have at least two justices off the court. You know, whether the third potential recusal was talked about in the briefing in the case and in the Election Commission proceedings, Justice Davis's mother was one of the contributors to Justice Benjamin's campaign. It was one of the challenge contributions. So she may decide to recuse herself or maybe ask to recuse. And under our Supreme Court's rules, it's the justice's decision as to whether or not they think that there's a conflict. So that is not reviewable. So that would be her decision. So
in about the minute that we have left, you know, there's an outstanding challenge. Beth Walker has challenged Bill Wooten, another Supreme Court candidate who tried to file for that public campaign financing. How much does this outcome impact that case?
Well, some of the rulings that Judge Kaufman made regarding the importance of filing timely and the importance of following the Election Commission's regulations are not the exact same challenges in the Wooten campaign, with respect to the Wooten campaign, but they are similar enough that Judge King, who's another circuit judge who has that case, could take those and decide to follow that ruling. He's not bound by Judge Kaufman, but it certainly is what we call precedent, something that judges look at. Ultimately, though, both of these cases will end up in the Supreme Court of Appeals, and whatever justices ultimately get picked to decide that from after we decide which justices are not going to hear the case will make the ultimate rulings as to whether or not Mr. Wooten and Justice Benjamin receive the public financing.
So cases pending before the Supreme Court with an election date set in early May.
Exactly.
Anthony Magistro, Charleston attorney with Powell and Magistro, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
As lawmakers approach the final week of this legislative session, one Winfield family is anxiously awaiting the House's approval of a Senate bill impacting their homeschooled son. Senators approved Senate Bill 105 last month, a bill that would allow homeschooled students to play sports at public schools. Rob Engel has this profile.
Ready? Keep them level. Good.
I have been playing baseball since I was 7. I always loved sports. Baseball is just the one I went to. It's always my favorite.
There you go.
Bryson French is 15 years old and a native of Winfield, West Virginia. And just a short drive from Bryson's hometown, lawmakers in Charleston are considering a bill that could have a big impact on this teen's future. Senate Bill 105, called the Tebow Bill for short. Bryson is homeschooled by his parents, Alan and Jenny.
Good.
And the bill would allow him and other homeschooled students to play sports at local public schools, schools that are members of the West Virginia Secondary Schools Activity Commission.
Nailed that one.
The bill was named after Heisman Trophy winner and former NFL quarterback Tim Tebow. Tebow, who grew up in Florida, was homeschooled, but played football for a local high school thanks to a similar bill in his state. Bryson, too, has similar ambitions for his baseball career.
I always loved it. I don't think I was always that good at it. I know when I was younger, I was always a lot slower. But I think the dedication and working hard, I gradually got better and better.
There you go. Good.
I plan on taking it as far as I can go, and definitely into college.
But without this bill, Bryson can't participate in state-sanctioned sports like a teen who attends a public school. That means if Bryson wants to play baseball at his age, he can only play in summer travel leagues. Bryson says he misses out on the spring baseball season a typical high school student participates in, putting him a step behind in the summer league.
I play for my travel team. We play 30 to 40 games every season. And all my teammates are playing another additional 20 to 30, maybe 40 games with their school teams. So I'm missing out on half the season that they get to do. I only play half the game. So the Tebow bill would give me the ability to just play more games.
Good, now go for some doubles.
That would be a true advantage or get me up to speed with the rest of them.
Good.
If the Tebow bill were to pass, Bryson would come here to Winfield High School to play baseball. Right now, the bill says homeschooled students would play for the public school district in which they live, but could not go out of that district if the school does not offer their sport.
However, opponents argue that this bill is unfair, prioritizing the needs of homeschoolers above those actually enrolled in public schools. Bernie Dolan is the executive director for the West Virginia Secondary Schools Activity Commission, the body that oversees high school athletics.
Currently, as the bill is written right now, homeschool students or students at non-member private or parochial schools could participate in athletics at our member schools, which they are not enrolled in. We just feel that our number one rule is if you're going to participate for a particular school, that you should be enrolled in that school.
But Bryson's dad, Alan, says his decision to homeschool his four children should not prevent them from participating in athletics, especially in a district where he pays taxes to support the schools.
This is a bill that is providing equal access to students. Having fully understood that we did not enroll our children in the school system, it is still a public opportunity that's given to students to be able to play these sports or do these other activities. We are full members of this community, but we are being denied the possibility of him participating with other children his age in those sports simply because we've chosen an alternative route of education for him.
According to the Homeschool Legal Defense Association, nearly 30 states either allow homeschoolers to participate in sports or allow school districts to decide. However, in a state like West Virginia, where school districts are laying off teachers due to declining revenues and shrinking student populations, WVSSAC's Dolan notes that this bill may also cause a funding issue.
Schools get money from the state based on enrollment. So all the money comes here to Charleston, and then the county's boards of education get money based on per capita students. So we would be paying for students who you're not getting reimbursement from the state.
Alan, however, disagrees.
A little low. What is the price difference between putting one or two children on a team as to not having them on the team? The coaches are still paid the same amount, the athletic directors, trainers, everyone's still paid the same amount. Uniform rental maybe a little bit of equipment charges. So there's not really an economic problem to this. That's faster. There's no reason that they couldn't amend that so that if we have a couple students playing from homeschools, there's extra funding given for those students to the schools. There you go. Last one. Make it pop.
There are other concerns about the bill as well, like how GPA and attendance eligibility requirements for athletics would translate for homeschooled students. Though Alan says these issues could easily be resolved by following the lead of another state that allows homeschoolers to play sports, Dolan says the position of the SSAC is firm.
The way it's written now, I really don't see any way for it to be adapted to satisfy the membership.
The Tebow bill has already been passed by the Senate and has moved to the House. If passed, Dolan says the commission would have to see what shape the bill was in before figuring out how to implement it. For the Legislature Today, I'm Rob Engel.
Charles Trump was elected to the West Virginia Senate in 2014. A Republican, he's from Morgan County. Senator Trump represents the 15th senatorial district and is the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee. He also serves as the vice chair of the Senate's Agriculture and Rural Development and Pensions Committees. Senator Trump previously served as a member of the House of Delegates from 1992 to 2004. During that time, he served three terms as the minority leader. Alan Evans is a Republican representing the House's 54th District. Evans is from Grant County. He was elected to the House in 1990 and serves as the chair of the House Committee on Agriculture. Isaac Spinagle represents the state's 55th House of Delegates District from Pendleton County. A Democrat, Spinagle was elected to the House in 2012. That year, he was named Pendleton County's Outstanding Democrat of the Year.
This has been the Legislature Today. I'm Ashton Morrow. We'll see you back here next week.
Support for the Legislature Today is provided by the following.
AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State. Online at aarp.org/WV. The West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission, working to double the degrees produced annually in our state by 2025. Through increased opportunities for West Virginians to earn the credentials today's economy demands. The High Technology Foundation, building a stronger West Virginia, online at wvhtf.org.
From West Virginia Public Broadcasting.